Welcome to Leadership Reimagined. I'm Dr. Jane Lovis, your host. During each episode of Leadership Reimagined, we take a look at leadership from the vantage point of what it's going to take for leaders to lead their organizations forward into a new future. And in this episode, we're creating that new future. Today, I'd like to welcome Heather Hansen. Heather is a global communication consultant, TEDx speaker, trainer, and author. She helps top global leaders show up, speak up, and inspire action in a changing world. She focuses on fostering unmuted communication cultures where every voice is heard, resulting in greater inclusion, innovation, and efficiency across remote and global teams. Along with private leadership communication coaching, Heather facilitates group training courses and consults on a number of topics related to global communication. She is also an external industry expert for NUS Business School's executive education programs, where she runs modules on communication, presentation, and storytelling skills. Welcome, Heather. I am so excited. And I want to share for our listeners, would you share what you were experiencing this morning before we got, or actually Heather's in Singapore. So it's morning for me here in the States and it's evening for Heather. And what were you experiencing this evening you shared with me?
I was just trying to figure out why we knew each other, because I knew your name and I've been looking at it over and over, and we weren't connected on LinkedIn. And I thought, why don't I just check Facebook? And sure enough, 100 friends in common. We were already connected and we know each other from 10 years ago. I mean, small world, amazing. So I'm even more excited to be here today with you. Thank you so much for having me. This is going to be fantastic.
Oh, you are so welcome. I am so thrilled, because communication is so critical for actually be a leader, be leadership without communication.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, you know, and I was on one podcast that was a leadership podcast, and the host said, so we're going to do something a little bit different today. We're going to talk about communication. Normally we're focused on leadership. And I said, communication is leadership. I mean, this couldn't be more on topic than, I mean, you should be talking about communication in every single episode if you're talking about leadership, because how can you be a leader if you aren't a good communicator? It is fundamental. It underpins everything.
Yes. And so my leaders have heard, my listeners have heard this before. The definition of leadership that I have kind of morphed is that leadership is the art of empowering a group of individuals to accomplish a vision, create a vision, mm-hmm. accomplish a goal. And how do you do that?
I love that.
Having conversations, yeah. And behind conversations mm-hmm. is communication.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's really what it's about, how you're showing up, speaking up, inspiring action on your teams. And you don't necessarily have to have the official leader title to be a leader in an organization either. There are plenty of internal influencers who, through their connections and their relationships, are influencing the organization in a number of ways. And that's because they are so good at communicating and inspiring others, and they kind of develop their own following within the company. And that's what's really scary, as we're seeing, you know, as we come out of the pandemic, we go back to work, some of these people have had awakenings and said, you know what, I'm ready to move on to something else. And we're seeing so many people leave. And when those internal leaders leave, they take everyone with them, because no one wants to go back to work without them. And so being a leader and a strong communicator within an organization at whatever level you might be is going to have a huge impact on your own success and the success of those around you. So I could not agree more with you. I think communication and leadership are pretty much synonymous. You have to be a communicator to be a leader, 100%.
Yeah. And we have seen in the news some real examples of how not to be a communicator as a leader. Mm.
Unfortunately, we've had a lot of poor examples of leadership communication in our world today. And, you know, that was one of the main reasons that I wanted to write my book, which has already come out in the UK, Europe, Asia, but is coming out very soon in the US in paperback. And it's called Unmuted. And the real reason I wrote it was because I was tired of these narratives, of listening to the same ideas from the same kinds of people, from the same parts of the world. And I thought, you know what, we need new ideas. And as we went into the pandemic, we all started hearing everyone say, you're on mute on every single phone call, right? Every video call, you're on mute. Oh, sorry, sorry, you know? And it hit me that, you know, we've been on mute for a long, long time. Many of us have been in our families, in our jobs, in our communities, in the world. We have been on mute. And if we're going to move forward, we have to bring out new voices and new ideas and hear from other parts of the world and just different people than what we've been hearing. And, you know, we've given our leaders a shot. We've heard their ideas. And yet what got us here is starting to push us off a cliff, basically. Mm-hmm. So it's time to start listening a little harder to other people and be more inclusive of the voices we're listening to, I think. And it's time for us individually to press unmute and show up in the world and share our ideas and our passions and our purpose.
Oh, that's so true on both sides. You know, the challenge, one of the challenges is with teleconference, you know, video conferencing, mm-hmm. Zoom, Teams, all these ways of pulling teams together. It's so great that it does that. And one of the challenges that you really focus on is now we have cross-culture communication at a level that we had not experienced. Because
very true.
One thing, if you're a manager of a cross-culture team, you are probably traveling to meet with that team. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Today, you can pull everyone together on a Zoom and you don't know who is where.
Absolutely right. Yep. And the world is coming to you. You know, mm-hmm. you could be sitting in your living room in my hometown in California and never leave. And the world is coming to you. And I think that was a big realization for a lot of people, people who haven't been international in the past, but now are dealing with colleagues in other places, either across the US, which we know is so multicultural to begin with, even right. among Americans, but then even outside of the US, you know, we're starting to deal with that a lot more. Here in Singapore, it's even the case. It's easy for us to travel around in Asia. The teams that I work with are spread all throughout Asia Pacific. And they might bring together their executive teams quarterly, maybe once a year, maybe quarterly. During the pandemic, they started meeting monthly on Zoom. And they had so much more contact and connection than they've ever had. And they thought, why haven't we been doing this from the start? Saving so much money on travel. And it allowed them to be much more in contact, which was a good thing, but it also ended up having some challenges because they thought, oh, now I know more about what's going on where you are in the world. And why are you doing this way? And why do you have this opinion? And I don't know how much I like you now. And so all these cross-cultural issues started coming to the surface. And people, you know, who haven't had that international experience where the world was coming to them and they were dealing with these things for the first time. And I think people are starting to realize, wow, okay, the world is global. We do need to be more mindful of our global communication. How do we speak with and interact with and build relationships with people who are different from us, whether it's within our own nation, because national culture doesn't always equal individual culture, you know, really, cultural difference is the same as just interpersonal difference, really, when it comes down to it. So it's the same skills that we use to understand and connect. But this has really come to the surface, I think, through the pandemic for sure.
I agree. And oftentimes the other challenge is you're doing Zoom meetings, so more people can join, mm-hmm. which means there are more voices to be heard. And there's also a responsibility for the leader to ensure that everyone has the chance to say what needs to be said. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's not, this is not to be replacing television where a leader gets on Zoom and speaks to 100 people.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And there's really new challenges about being inclusive in these environments, because it's so easy for people to turn off their camera, press mute, hide in the background. And for some people, it has helped them to be more confident when they do speak up, that they mm-hmm. don't feel like they're on the spot as much. But for others, they've used it as a way to hide. And that becomes a bit of a problem. And it makes it even more important for the leader to be able to bring those voices into the discussion. And you have to be much more aware. And how do you do that in these really large groups? So mm-hmm. a balance of having the larger town hall discussions versus the smaller team meetings and the check-ins. And every company I work with has done things a little bit differently, but it has been this combination of, okay, well, now we can have these larger, usually more one direction communication, like a large global town hall.
Right.
And then they'll have their smaller team meetings and check-ins from there where they can hear more voices, because it's those large events where, sure, there might be 2% who are really active in the chat and you'll hear the loudest voices in the room, but you won't necessarily hear the dissenting voices or the new ideas. That needs to be taken into smaller groups, especially in the remote settings.
So what are some of the ideas, suggestions, recommendations that you share mm-hmm. with your clients on how to maintain? Because, you know, it's really easy to lose communication.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's mm-hmm. a real challenge to maintain, to keep it and expand it. It takes mm-hmm. a lot of work.
It does. It does. And as we moved into the pandemic, I'll never forget one leader that I work with. He said, yeah, you know, I need to feel like I know what's going on. And so I want to make sure my team is okay. So I am having check-in calls with everyone on my team weekly, one-on-one. And I said, oh, wow, that sounds great. Thinking the team was maybe 8 people or something. I said, so how many people on your team? And he goes, 40. And I said, you're having 40 one-on-one calls every week. This might be overdoing it. I'm not sure this is the best use of your time. Like, I understand you want to be in touch, checking in, but I mean, he had to have been using minimum a full work day, if not 2, just on phone calls, checking in with his team members. And so we talked about, you know, what other options are there? How can we maintain that contact from the distance? And even though now, it was actually just yesterday here in Singapore, restrictions were finally lifted and we are 100% back at work. Just yesterday. I think in the States, you've probably been back to work a while longer than that. But still, many, many companies have just put into effect that we can have 50% from home. You know, a lot are continuing remote working. So I think it's important to start brainstorming these ideas of how can we keep the lines of communication open. So what this individual did was he started a weekly video that he would do over the weekend on his mobile phone, his cell phone, and he would just do a quick video message to the team, maybe just telling a story about what he was doing that weekend. It reminded him of something work-related, or maybe it was just more personal or just a greeting and warm wishes for the week ahead. And then he would send that out in an email on Monday mornings. And that was one way that he felt like he was connecting to them. And alongside that, he set up office hours. So it's a little bit like the open door policy at the office. If my door is open, feel free to walk in and talk. Mm-hmm. And so he would say, okay, these hours on Tuesday and Thursday, I have an hour and a half dedicated on each day at these times. Those are my open doors. You want to hop in on a Zoom call? I'll just be in my Zoom meeting room. You hop in, right? Mm-hmm. And then it was a way that he could also have those lines of communication open. So that's another way that you could be doing it. But I've seen people implement different ideas, but that seemed to work for him quite well. There are also the cultural expectations, though, in that, because in an Asian context, especially, if you can easily say, well, just come to me, just tell me if there's anything. But people who are below you in rank will not necessarily just volunteer to come in and talk to you, because that's seen as possibly challenging authority or being disrespectful. And so even if you beg them to come to you, they may not actually do that. So you do have to be proactive in that sense as well. to reach out to people if you haven't heard from them for a while, so that you do have your finger on the pulse, right?
Right.
So lots of different considerations as we move into this now more hybrid space, right? Of maybe we're having stronger connections with the people showing up in the office and we're losing touch with those who are at home. How do we bring them into the conversations? How do we run hybrid events? This is the new challenge that we're dealing with now as we re-enter the workforce.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Cause I've been on some of the hybrid, especially in a larger group where you've mm-hmm. got, say there's 50 people and mm-hmm. 10 to 15 are in the room and everybody else is on Zoom. It's, mm-hmm. we haven't quite figured that out yet.
No, it's a new skill set. It's a new skill set. And it's very difficult for people to remember the 35 online.
Exactly.
And, you know, the 15 get into their little discussions and the 35 are forgotten. Mm-hmm. Some of the larger companies I work with have built new studios in their offices, have actually built massive screens into conference rooms where they can have all the Zoom gallery up there. So you see their faces right in front of you. You're remembering they're there. It's a matter of managing the chat, allowing people to unmute, involving them, including them. But these are huge, huge challenges that we're still trying to figure out. And we're getting there, but I think we'll see a full year at least of us trying to transition into this, just like we did in the pandemic. Mm-hmm. First year, really rocky. Second year, okay, we're getting there. And then, okay, now we're going to mix it up again and go to hybrid. It's going to take us a good year to get all of the tech in place and the right systems and understand how to include people there, I think.
Right.
But I think we learned a lot, you know, over the last 2 years. I think that we'll jump pretty easily into this if we're committed to doing it.
The commitment and really being willing to say that we don't know what to do. We don't know how this, mm-hmm. so we're going to keep trying things.
It's that learning mentality and the vulnerability that I think we're all going to have to bring to work, you know, in our laptop bags, mm-hmm. as we re-enter. And that has been probably the one place where I've seen the most pushback in my conversations with leaders of companies is when I bring up vulnerability. And they really kind of fight that one. And they say, no, vulnerability is weakness. And why do I have to be so personal? But I think there's been a massive redefinition of what vulnerability means in the workplace. It's about just showing up as a full human. And we all have our faults. We're all testing. We're experimenting. We're doing our best. And we don't have to pretend that we are Superman or Superwoman all the time. And I think that's a massive shift that we're seeing in leadership. And that was happening before the pandemic. You know, we were wanting more authentic leaders. We were wanting more vulnerability. We were wanting to have greater balance between our home life and our work life and being seen as full people. And now that shift is fully complete. I think people will leave organizations if they don't feel that they are accepted and can be themselves and are included in the discussion and acknowledged for their contribution. If that's not happening, forget it, you know, and leaders are going to have to embrace that. Even if they feel like, ooh, I don't want to be vulnerable. They're going to have to be, or they're going to be left behind, or their teams are going to leave them behind. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, going to be one of the biggest shifts that we see over the next year that we're already seeing with the Great Resignation. And it's that awakening of knowing, I don't want to work in a place that I don't feel has a purpose, or I'm not passionate about, or I'm not acknowledged, or I don't belong. Right. And we'll see even more of that, I think.
Somebody was sharing with me the other day, we were having a conversation about a similar topic. And, you know, the number of people that have left jobs, mm-hmm. and the number of people that are willing to come back, you know, are ready to come back to work, and there's still a shortage. Mm-hmm. So yeah. If you're the hiring manager, you know, there's, I also see some things about, oh, now you can get anybody to come back. It's like, no, there's still, mm-hmm. and you don't want just anybody. You want to know that that person is the right person, and mm-hmm. best way for them to be the right person is for you to be the right company, the right leader.
Exactly. It's exactly that. Yeah. And being one who is really walking the talk, you know, when we look at hiring, And this whole conversation around diversity and inclusion as well. When people are hiring, they're usually looking for a cultural fit. Well, if you're only looking for a cultural fit, then you aren't going to have the cognitive diversity that's necessary to have innovation and new ideas. But we know that that's what people are looking for. And it comes all the way down to language, you know, because I'm very focused on the language piece. And we even know that in hiring conversations, a manager could be discriminating due to an unconscious bias around accent, for example. So someone shows up and this is true of anyone, anywhere, the minute you hear someone open their mouth, you are creating a picture in your mind. Your listeners right now are creating a picture in their mind. What do I look like? How old am I? Where am I from? What's my education level? What's my socioeconomic status? They're creating all of these images and judgments in their minds without even really realizing they're doing it. And it's just as we judge people the minute we see them, but even the minute we hear the voice, we have come to a bunch of conclusions. And so the hiring managers we've found, and this is also played out in courtrooms with judges granting paroles, for example. And when the person has an accent that is different from our own, we will see them as an other, and we will typically discriminate against them, maybe because we get tired listening to them. So we turn off and we don't want to listen because, oh, it's too hard for me. I don't want to listen. Their accent's too heavy. They need to speak in a way that I can better understand. It's their fault, instead of thinking, how can I maybe understand them better? And so we know that accent bias, communication styles, this is playing a huge part in even how we're building the relationship, whether we hire a person, whether we promote them. I mean, my whole company has been built around making money off of this bias. That's the hypocrisy of what I do, right? Is that, you know, HR calls me, we really want to promote him, but, you know, we can't understand his accent. It's like, really? You're holding someone back because you think he has a heavy accent? Like, that's truly the reason? And this is probably the only acceptable form of discrimination left. You know, if they called me and said, well, we're holding him back because he's Indian, which it's the Indian accent they're having an issue with, they would never be allowed to say that out loud. But they can say, oh, his accent's too heavy. And so I think that, you know, we're hiding behind some issues here when it comes to language and communication, especially in global contexts, where we're going to need to step up and be more accepting and inclusive and work harder to meet others halfway. Just because we're born into English doesn't mean that we dictate how it is used in the world. And we need to recognize that privilege that we've been born into, that we walk into any conversation globally and we have the power in that conversation. And that shows up in the C-suite of global companies as well, where, you know, if we look at the CEOs of the Fortune 500, it's a very, very small percentage who are not native English speakers. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, you can count on one hand, right? Sort of thing. Yes. So this is, I think, a huge issue that is not being talked about in diversity and inclusion, and one that we're going to have to start paying attention to because it's underlying all of these other forms of discrimination, whether it's sexuality or race, ethnicity. The way we speak really underpins all of those. So that might be going a little off topic here, but I find it so fascinating, and it's not something we talk about.
Well, and it's totally, because if we're going to reimagine leadership, that's we got to look at all the facets. And what you just brought up is, you know, there are a lot of assessments out to help you hire somebody. And you can do things like not show name, sex, age, anything that gives any kind, you can block out any countries on, you know, where they've worked. You can do all of that to kind of blind, except for their skills. No matter what, you have to have a conversation with that person.
Yeah. At some point.
You can't block that out. Whether it's a phone conversation or an in-person, you can't block out that vocal communication.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And there's a lot we can hear in a voice. There's so much we hear, and we have immediate reactions to different kinds of speech. types of speech. And it goes all the way back to being children in the movies we were raised watching. Mm-hmm. You know, if, you know, I was raised on Indiana Jones and all those classic action films. And who were the villains? They were never like the hero American male voice. It was Germans, Russians, Eastern Europeans, you know, and as time moved on, we started seeing more Arabs as the villains. And so depending on the geopolitical landscape, the villains in our movies and everything in our culture, the bad guys, the outsiders, they sound different. It's never the sexy American voice. It's an accented voice that is the enemy. Mm-hmm. And then when we hear those accents later on in life, it takes us right back to whatever contact we had growing up. Where have we heard it before? And then you put that, your mind, often without you realizing it, finds that pattern, slots it in, and thinks immediately, that's an other. That's someone that is, that doesn't belong.
And how do you get back past that? Because I know it's possible.
Yeah. Yeah. The first step is awareness. Most people aren't aware of it, you know, until it's right in your face. When you're having a conversation with someone, and especially if you realize their accent is different from yours and you're feeling irritated, try to figure out why. You know, why is it? Why do you feel irritated listening to this person? I mean, Indian English is a very good example, especially from an American context, because the majority of people, when they have contact with Indian English, that has been calling a call center. And when do you call a call center? When you're having a problem. So you're already upset. You're already angry. You call this call center and then you get more frustrated because you're dealing with an accent that's difficult for you to understand because you don't have enough contact with it. You haven't heard it enough. And you get off the call and you're frustrated. And it's the first thing anybody talks about is the English accent on that phone call. Oh, I couldn't even understand him. Oh, I can't this and that. Nah. And that's how we react. So what happens then when you walk into a workplace or somebody comes in for a position at your work and you're the hiring manager and they have a heavier Indian accent that reminds you of all those people in the call centers that you've dealt with that you can't stand, who are incompetent in your eyes, who couldn't fix your problem, who were so frustrating. Do you want to work with that person? You've suddenly put all of that onto that person. So if you're aware, like, okay, hold on. I know that I have a bias against this. I know I've had bad experiences in the past where I was in a poor emotional state. Mm-hmm. And when I dealt with this style of speech, I'm going to place that to the side and I'm really going to listen to the meaning behind the message here and try to overlook that frustration that you have due to all your past experience that was very specific. Right.
Yep.
But you'll find that as you raise your awareness, and we all have these biases, and it doesn't even have to be a foreign accent. It could be a Southern accent. It could be a Boston accent. It could be a New Jersey. It could be an LA. It, you know, just within the US, we do this to each other without being, it's not a native, non-native, or even necessarily an ethnicity thing. It is just, what is it when you hear a New Jersey accent? What do you think of? When you hear Boston, what do you think of? When you know, I have a friend from Alabama. She moved to Wall Street, worked on Wall Street. Guess how far she got there? I mean, male dominated to begin with. And they were calling her Pollyanna in meetings. No one took her seriously. She was just the Southern belle with the sweet, hospitable accent. And she was that little perfect picture for them. And she was never taken seriously.
Right.
So we do this to each other. It does not even have to be in a global sense. We're doing it all the time. And that can easily play out in the workplace, especially as we become more remote and more, you know, distant, even within the States.
And one of the things in that awareness is to be authentic with yourself of what you're making that mean, because it's also so easy to say, no, I don't do that. I don't do that.
I know. Everybody will say that. I don't do that. No, I'm not, you know, this and that, and I'm not privileged and I'm not this. But if you really get honest with yourself and you really get in tune with your emotions and frustrations and why does someone rub me the wrong way, I guarantee it's going to come back to you and some kind of experience you have had in your past. And it's about really raising that level of self-awareness. I mean, the very first chapter in my book is called Who Are You? Because we start with that foundation of who are you really? What has your culture given you? What values has your culture given you? Are they actually yours? What have you chosen versus what your culture gave you? And that's step number one. And I think leaders are going to have to really do some self-assessing and checking in to figure this out, because there's a lot happening. And I think the problem is that many people have not had enough of that international exposure and experience. So they don't really realize it when it happens the first time. And they might just feel that frustration, but not know why. And it's only after you run into this a few times that you start to realize, like, why does this person bother me? Or why is this situation difficult? But I think we're going to see much, much more of this as the world comes to us, right?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I've been out of the States for 20 years, so I live this every day, but you know, I have plenty of family and friends who, you know, have never lived outside California and or Northern California. Right. I mean, we even have the differences North to South, but we're going to start seeing a lot more, and we are a very multicultural nation anyway, but we're seeing a lot more of this difference coming out in the American landscape. Right. Yeah.
Well, Heather, our time is just about up.
You can. Oh, how sad. I could talk to you all day, Jane. Oh, I wish we could go on for another hour.
So, Heather, what would you like to share? What one last piece of advice, tidbit, would you like to share with our listeners?
I would just hope that people, as we move back into the world of work again, post-pandemic, we have this opportunity to build the world that we want to see, the one that we want to live in, and we can be that change. But it's going to take us speaking up, showing up, speaking up, inspiring others. We have to press unmute. And that comes down to a personal decision to take the risk that, yes, you could be judged. Yes, people might not like you and your ideas, but it's up to us to stand up and show up and express ourselves when we know that something is right. And I hope that we are moving into a new phase now where people have that courage, because we've been silenced for too long, and it's going to take some massive shifts and changes. So that's just the thought I'd like to leave with people, that I hope all of the listeners out there will take this moment to press unmute and share their message, their unique brilliance with the world, so that we can find new ideas, new innovations, and move forward.
And there are plenty of challenges and problems out in the world that need new answers.
Yep, there are. So it's time. It's time to unmute. So I hope they will.
It is. Thank you, Heather. This has been great.
Thanks so much for having me, Jane.
Thank you for joining us this week on Leadership Reimagined. I encourage you to take something that you heard today and apply it in your business. The key to progress is action and sharing. I'd love to hear what you accomplish. Email me at jlovis@lovisconsulting.com and let me know. Speaking of applying it in your business, if you're struggling or looking to expand your leadership skills, let's talk. You can go to lovisconsulting.com. That's L-O-V as in Victor, A-S, consulting.com, and schedule a quick call with me. We need powerful, strong, compassionate leaders to solve the challenges we are facing today. Please subscribe on your favorite platform and share with your friends and family. Thank you for supporting us as we cause and expand 1 million women leaders in tech by 2030. Have a great week, and I look forward to seeing you next week.